Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 175 of Rogue Startups. Craig, you have some big news today.
I do. Yeah. It's been quite the whirlwind last couple of days. We found out a few weeks ago, I guess, that we were accepted, that Castos was accepted into the first batch of Tiny Seed companies. And they made the announcement yesterday. And so, yeah, it's been a lot of, you know, getting that organized and chatting with folks and all this kind of stuff. And it feels really cool to be able to tell everybody and talk to you, Dave, about it, because you didn't know either. I didn't tell anyone but my wife, I think, about it. So, it's really cool to be able to talk about it. And I think it's a kind of important to talk about why we did it. Because a lot of folks, like you asked before we started recording, is like, why did you do this? And you don't, you know, didn't seem like you needed to do this kind of thing. But we're super excited. I can already tell that it's a really special group of companies in there and a really special group of mentors. And obviously Rob and Einar are super involved, which is really powerful too. So,
yeah, I mean, I've seen the announcement of the various mentors and they're all top grade folks for, you know, their respective areas of expertise and so on and so forth. But let's just dive right into this because, I mean, what was your motive for doing this with Castos? Because we've been talking about Castos for years at this point. And this wasn't something that I ever heard you really allude to saying, man, I wish I could just get some funding, or I really feel like, you know, if I had some more money, I could really take this thing to the next level. I wasn't hearing that. And so either I'm totally naive and I missed some subtle signal that you threw out there, or you were really playing this close to the vest here.
Yeah, I think it's more the latter. I mean, I haven't talked about this at all. And the reason, one of the reasons is like, we're in a really competitive field, and a competitive field kind of even within our little world. You know, there's other people that we know that are doing this kind of thing. And so that's part of it. But it all kind of started not from, you know, me needing the Tiny Seed money to live on or anything. Cause I mean, Castos is a, you know, pretty big and successful SaaS app. Whatever, it's not big, but it's whatever. It doesn't need extra money for me to live on. But it really was, I started thinking around the end of the year about like, what if we raise some money for the business? Like, what could we do with Castos as opposed to bootstrapping it? Because we're seeing, even now, still seeing like really solid, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9% growth every month after 2 years even. And, you know, we passed having 1,000 customers back in like December or something. And we've, you know, been growing since then. So we have we have solid revenue and are growing. And you look at like the podcasting space a little bit and you're like, you know, this player gets bought by this player and Spotify buys these guys and all this kind of stuff is happening. And I look at it and say like, could we be Basecamp or MailChimp and like run this business forever as bootstrapped, you know, company? Yeah, we could probably. But I think that the chance is better that we would miss out on some kind of opportunity either from being involved in something like Tiny Seed or having the resources, both financially and mentors and connections and all this kind of stuff of Tiny Seed to open the door for opportunities for us in partnerships or whatever else might come down the road. Or just growing a lot faster than we could, you know, with being bootstrapped. So that's really why we did. I mean, Tiny Seed, I know like originally the thought was it's for people who are just trying to get a new app off the ground. And I can tell you from some of the other people that I know run the cohort, and by the time this episode goes out, there'll be another couple announcements about the other companies in the first cohort. Some of them are definitely like pre-revenue, just getting their MVP out the door. And that's cool. But there's also other companies like Castos in there that have been around for years. And people are saying, okay, it's time to really get serious about this and put some muscle behind it. So,
well, that's interesting because, I mean, maybe I read too much into what they were talking about in their initial announcements about this. But it very much sounded like they were trying to give the living wage for founders to be able to really focus on the business. But that's not what you're doing here. And obviously, they know where you're at. They know your personal story and that you don't need to use this for living and that you're going to invest it in the business. So that's definitely okay. That's something that's on the table for them to say, yeah, we definitely approve of this kind of investment as opposed to just making it for living.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I around the end of the year and the early kind of spring was talking to Rob kind of offline about like, you know, hey, I'm thinking about raising money. Kind of, how did you think about raising money or not, or, you know, eventually getting acquired by Lead Pages when he was with Drip? And that's kind of where, you know, some of the conversation about like, yeah, probably some more resources beyond the business would be, it's better than the, like the risk and the downside of taking on an investor. The potential upside is probably bigger. And then I talked to a bunch of other people after this and kind of confirmed that. And it went from, yeah, you probably should do this to, you know, yeah, I mean, Tiny Seed initially was kind of built for people who are just trying to quit their day job so they can focus full time on their app, to they're investing in businesses that can become 7-8 figure businesses. And it doesn't matter to them really what stage you're at. It's just a matter of, you know, would an investment and the participation in the accelerator program and the mentors and all this kind of stuff help you get there? And for us, the answer is hell yeah. I mean, almost like even without the money, it would be worth it, you know?
Nice. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes total sense. So can you share what the plans are that you have for the next 3 to 6 months?
Yeah, I can share pretty roughly what the plan is. I'll give kind of percentages of what I have planned. So of the, from like a financial perspective of the money that we've received, we'll spend probably 75% of it on marketing and advertising and customer acquisition, and about 25% of it on product. And so product for me is like design and development. And the cool thing about it is, you know, I already make a salary from Castos. We already pay all of our people. You know, we're already 4 people. We'll kind of increase the hours on one of our folks, or probably 2 of them, to bring them up to pretty much full time, and then just spend the rest of the money hiring a full time marketer and spending and giving them a budget to play with.
Nice. Did you, well, yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into the nuts and bolts of what you're doing, because I'm sure as you're going along here in the next few months, we'll talk about, hey, you tried this experiment and this is what happened.
Totally. Yep.
Yeah. So that's super exciting, man. I'm very stoked for you.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Yeah. It's definitely another level in terms of like how I feel about the business, you know, like it was a cool, good business before, but now it's like, okay, I'm in like, you know, whatever, not the big leagues or whatever, but like I have responsibility to someone other than myself and my family now. And like, we got to make it happen. And, you know, talk to the team about that yesterday morning. We had a call before the announcement went out, and, you know, tried to relay that pretty subtly, but succinctly, that like, you know, okay, we're not like a huge venture backed company with like 20 million in the bank, but the goal now is, this money is not sitting in the bank. This money is going to get deployed to grow, because that's its job. And we can use this money to grow, and then we can become a profitable, kind of more lifestyle, profit-driven company. That's cool. But we probably will just continue to plow as much money as we can back into the growth of the company. And I don't plan on taking, you know, a bunch of profits or dividends from the business anytime soon.
Excellent. So I'm sure that we will all be glued to the for updates over the next few months. It'll be interesting to see what you get to do with all of this, because we've had those conversations in the past. Like, what would you do if you got a budget of $100,000? Well, you just got $100,000, so
we'll see
how it goes. Yeah, Craig gets to live the dream here.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I mean, you know, the hard thing is the first thing I'll be doing is something I've never done, you know, hiring a marketing person, which is something should be kind of my job. As the non-developer, I should be the marketer. And I still will be really involved in marketing from probably like a high level strategy perspective. But, you know, we need somebody who wakes up every day and thinks, how can I get more users? And I think about that a lot, but I think about a lot of other shit too. So we need to have someone that's just like singularly focused on this. And I think that'll make a huge difference. So,
yeah, it's hard to be the founder and distracted all the time and have that singular focus on that. So that's cool. Sure.
Yeah.
Really cool.
How are things with you, man?
Things are good. I haven't, you know, not a lot of updates or changes since our last episode about updates and things like that. We're trying to push a major update of the plugins out the door. And once again, it's delayed on my account, trying to get a site update done and not had any time to dedicate to that. So I'm flirting with the idea at this point of hiring somebody to try to actually do that, but I'm not really sure where the funds are going to come from. So I think I'm just going to have to buck up and work extra hours to get that piece done so I can push this out the door and say we're done.
This is like a front end marketing site update or?
Yeah. It's for the classifieds plugin. I mean, we have a WordPress theme on there from 2011. And I had to struggle. So we had a forced upgrade in WordPress engine, WP engine, sorry. That was PHP 7. The damn theme wasn't even PHP 7 compliant because it was so old.
Oh, wow.
Updates. Yeah, it was an old Woo theme thing, but they just stopped supplying updates several years ago. So I've had that sitting on the site, and I updated the one on Business Directory plugin a long time ago when we upgraded the version, but I never went back and did the same thing for AWPCP. And now that we're getting ready to push a major update, I'm trying to do that, except that when I went back to look at what I did in BDP, because I was like, oh, I'll just take a lot of the same ideas and thoughts and page structure that I had over here and dump it over into AWPCP. I don't really care.
Yep.
I can change the content very easily if I had some basic structure to hang it on. Well, for whatever reason, I can't seem to figure out how the fuck I got the structure into BDP, which is really embarrassing as a WordPress guy. But in my defense, I haven't touched that theme in 3 years. So
yeah. Do I remember you used like a Genesis theme or something for it? Or
yeah, StudioPress. It's a StudioPress theme. It's a Genesis. It's called Centric Pro. It's a great theme. Works like a champ. Just however I set up and configured that thing, I can't seem to replicate it at this point. And I've like switched in between then and now, like to other things. Like I redid parts of Big Snow, Tiny Conf by hand. And then I was experimenting for a while on redoing Recapture, but with Beaver Builder. And so I have like this jumble of shit in my head of how I put this stuff together from the content perspective, and I can't unpack it anymore. And I'm like trying to relearn how to run one of these new StudioPress themes from scratch and then getting distracted. Like if I had 2 or 3 days, I'm sure I could nail this thing, but I don't have 2 or 3 unfettered, totally dedicated, distraction-free days. And that's my limiting factor here, which is
all of our websites run on Genesis, and I don't know if you've taken a look at the widgets area, like appearance and then widgets. It controls the front page typically, where you code in a bunch of like HTML and widgets, and those are the different like sections on the front page. I don't know if that's how Centric works or not, but that's how all of our stuff works, which is kind of nice because it's a little modular, but it's definitely not like Beaver Builder or Elementor or something like that, where you just get on the front end and design it around and make it look like you want. Pretty old school like that.
Yeah, the front page is one of the pages that I was trying to redo. The other one, which is not the front page at all, is my features page. And I thought I knew where that was, and I think I found the content. But then when I go in there and I change the content, it's not updating the front page. So I think I have old copies of shit laying around in the site, so I'm having trouble. And what's even more infuriating is that, the dashboard search on the admin. So I look for keywords to certain things in content. It's not finding them in the Genesis area. So I'm like,
It's tough, man. It's so tough. You know, on this front, I've been hearing more and more about Webflow as a CMS of choice lately. I've used it just a little bit. When we bought SalesCamp, the homepage for it was on Webflow. And so we played around with it a little bit then, and it was fine. It was okay. But yeah, I mean, I hear quite a bit of buzz around it these days. So it'll be interesting to see where it goes in the next, year or so.
Yeah. Do you remember Jason Glaspy from the Rhodium Group?
Yeah.
So he posted something on Twitter where he was really interested in getting a job with Webflow. And he'd like built a whole resume site in Webflow for the Webflow job.
Awesome.
And then he tweeted about it. It was really a cool experience to watch. And I thought, hey, that's totally unique. And why would that not get their attention? So I don't know if it got their attention or not, but I asked Jason privately. I said, hey, did this work for you? And he's like, well, I haven't really heard back. Which I was like, huh, that's weird. Cause you've got somebody who's interested to be an evangelist of your technology. He used your technology to build a resume, to apply for a job, to promote your technology. I thought it was cool. Apparently I was the only one. So
no, man. I mean, you know, it's amazing though, Dave, like more and more, that is really like all that matters when you're hiring somebody or trying to get a job. I feel like all that matters is like what you have done in the field or what you can do, like resumes and even interviews to a certain extent. I mean, interviews for like personality and fit and culture and stuff like that. But like for aptitude, like open source contributions and your social media and like what other marketing roles have you held and stuff like that are so much more important than like a one page document that should describe what you are. You know, like it's just crazy how your resume is the shit you do online these days.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, the validity of LinkedIn, I think, goes down every year just because it's, you know, mostly about connection spam and stuff like that, or people are doing cold outreach, but it has less and less applicability, I think, in terms of like your quote unquote resume. I just don't hear people looking at that as a resume as much anymore.
Yep. Totally. Totally.
So speaking of other cool tools, did you see the article from Heat and Shaw the other day?
Yeah, man, this is super interesting. Talking about no code, the no code movement.
Yeah. Yeah. So on his site, usefyi.com, and we'll link this in the show notes so you don't have to look this up. But Heaton was basically doing a survey of almost 300 makers, and he was trying to figure out like what were the things that they did and are they doing, you know, what are the tools that they engage in? He was trying to figure out what's going on inside of the no code movement. So if for somehow you've been living under a rock, the no code movement is, you know, building up a series of services or business based on other existing services without you having to write the traditional, you know, build up, here's a server and I'm going to have a front end to the server and I'm going to deploy this out into a web machine somewhere out there and I'm going to have a database and like all of this other technology horseshit you have to go through to stand up a whole service and a business. That these no code services allow you through things like Zapier and Airtable and a variety of other things, Typeform, where you can just sort of connect a bunch of these services together and deploy a business with a whole lot less ceremony and much more quickly than you would if you just wrote this stuff all from scratch.
Yeah.
And what was cool about the survey that he had here is that, you know, like what are the things that people were struggling with and how many of them have used certain kinds of no code services. And so you kind of got like this broad and deep insight into the maker community. But the thing that I like about the whole no code movement, and this has been going on for years, like, you know, Ken Wallace of Mastermind Jam put the whole thing together for his initial version using all no code. He did it with Zapier and Typeform and a bunch of other things that he hobbled together. That I think this is the future for all of our, you know, MVPs and things that people are trying to get out there, especially in areas where you have lower expectations or niches where they just don't have as many choices for various kinds of software. You can put something together pretty quickly and demonstrate to others the value of your proposition in a way that gets that right in front of them. And instead of you just waving your hands, they actually see and get to play with something right away. So you can start doing your customer iteration more quickly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that's something a little bit to be careful of is that putting on an MVP just to get in front of your customers is maybe like more dangerous now than it was before because there's so much competition that you know people are getting good looking MVPs or first versions of products from, you know, maybe your competitors if you're in a really competitive space. But if you're in countertop estimation software, then, you know, hooking something up with Typeform and Zapier and Google Sheets and MailChimp is probably perfectly fine.
With apologies to Harry and Ted, who are probably violently shaking their heads right now saying, no, it's not fine. Our customers would hate that, and rightly so.
No, right. But you mean, you know what I mean? Like somebody getting into an industry where people don't expect much from software, which is not the area where you and I are the consumers of most software. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at.
No. And in fact, one of the very first things that I ever worked on was for a lumber company. They were a lumber wholesaler.
Yep.
And one of the very first things they had me do was to basically build a transportation workflow. So they had this staging series of staging criteria for their trucks. So they would basically be trying to fill a truck with lumber. And then when that truck was ready to be loaded, then it moved to a different stage. And then when that truck was in transit, it went to a different stage. And I built that all first in Excel, then later in Access. And then at some point I had to upgrade Access so that it was just the front end. And I put a SQL Server on it. And this was like over the course of 8 years. Mm-hmm. So these guys were super appreciative of the fact that I could do all of this because they simply did not understand that these things would be possible. And today with a no code movement, you could go to a niche like these guys and say, all right, well, what is it that you really need? And you could cobble something together with no code, and it would likely be way better than what they have today. And it's most likely in an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah, no, this is absolutely true. And I think this speaks to another article that you had sent me around this topic, is that everyone's competitor, not everyone's competitor, is Excel. And like, it talks about the debundling of Excel. Kind of like folks have debundled, Craigslist, and people, and you know, things like StubHub have come out of Craigslist niches, and they've said, okay, instead of just using like the tickets part of Craigslist, they can make a whole app around this. People are kind of saying the same thing about like, you know, CRM software and email providers and all this kind of stuff is really just coming out of Excel, because the barrier, like the barrier to entry for people to come in to use your tool is always higher, and the cost is always higher, and the learning curve is always higher than just using Excel or Google Sheets, whatever you want to call it. And so I think like no code is a way to take that opportunity, you know, like the opportunity to say like, yeah, Excel is really easy, but it kind of sucks. What if I could build like this functionality into a dedicated app that does it better than Excel? That's the opportunity. But the risk is people could just use Excel. You know, like it's definitely a risk, you know, an opportunity and a risk at the same time.
Yeah, I think there has to be a specific stage that the users of Excel are at, because it has to be where the complexity of what they're trying to do is suddenly outweighed by how easy it is to do in Excel at that point. And that's the same point that the trucking company, the lumber company that I work for, got to. Manipulating this in Excel was just too much. And it was too complicated, and things were getting dropped, and it didn't function as the tool that they wanted it. But you know, here's a sad admission for you right here. I have been using the same Excel invoicing template for my clients since 1994.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
And I've had this thing upgraded for, I mean, I can't even tell you how many versions of Excel that's been through at this point, but the poor thing has been upgraded. It uses macros. I mean, it is not the best experience, but guess what? I send one or two invoices a month to my clients, and it does exactly what I needed to do. Like for me to upgrade to less accounting or something like that, I just don't feel that kind of pain. Like it's not there for me to want to make that step up. But if I am like running an agency and I'm sending out 30, 40 invoices a month, or I'm sending out weekly invoices and I got to track everybody's time and I got this other stuff to go along with my accounting and time tracking, like that's where the pain is felt. And sure, you can say that, you know, Excel is going to work, but at some point that scale falls down and then you have to find a SaaS. So I think that's, well, maybe not a SaaS, but you got to find something else, right?
Yeah.
And that's where this unbundling of apps from Excel. So if you're looking for inspiration or something to do, we'll link this one article in the show notes as well. You can look at the long list of Excel functionality, and Excel being a wildly general tool. You know, they're talking about, here's a real estate profitability sheet and a landlord checklist and cost benefit analysis and profit loss statements and invoicing and time tracking and all of these things. And then, of course, they have this very hard to read series of links that are going from all these ideas in this long list saying, here's a startup that does this, here's a startup that does that. I didn't even recognize most of the startups on there. That's how, you know, out of that loop I am, because those are very purpose-driven solutions. Like you have to be in that industry to know,
yeah,
hey, I have this specific set of needs and Excel no longer fills that. Right.
And I think that's where like a lot of us who kind of live in online businesses only can think of solution for online businesses, right? Because I mean, you know, for us to build an app for a lumberyard would be really dangerous and scary because I don't know anything about a lumberyard other than they have trees that are cut up, right? And like, I don't know yeah. how they run or what their problems are and all this kind of stuff. And to try to go dive deep enough to really like peel the onion and understand what those people are looking for is really hard. And so I think that's probably why like those tools are obscure for us and kind of relatively unknown is, I mean, there's not a lot of people that have those problems and it's really outside of our wheelhouse as, you know, kind of digital working people.
Yeah. And I will say that the reason that I discovered that opportunity in the first place is that I was, you know, I was young. I was already working for software companies, but I was looking for something a little on the side. And those, I happen to have a friend that worked at this company and she mentioned to me that they were looking for this. So I, you know, set up mm-hmm. a meeting and went in and talked to them about it. And I was totally honest with them. I said, look, I don't understand your business, but, you know, I am happy to sit here and talk as much as you want for free to learn that so that I can properly do what it is you need to do here. And they patiently sat down and we wrote up, you know, screenshot and, you know, screen mockups and, you know, wrote down requirements and I sat there and clarified with them. And this was all very much a discovery process, but by going in and doing that deeply, I was able to write something that was very useful to them. Yeah. And that I got paid for. Like, you know, at that point I was like, okay, I understand what you guys want. I understand how I can build it. And what I didn't understand, I had friends I could go ask. So I went and put that whole thing together at that point. So, you know, this is a great thing if you have a connection somewhere or are willing to put yourself out there and say, hey, I would like to learn about your business and I would like to help build something that you're struggling with right now. And maybe it's a replacement for what you've got in Excel. And I can, you know, if you're doing it with a no code solution, you can say, look, you know, once I understand this, I can probably deliver it to you at a very reasonable price because I don't have to build everything from scratch. Mm-hmm. I have all these tools in my toolbox over here that basically allow me to throw up a house in a very short amount of time with standard materials. And then yeah. if you want to customize that house, okay, then we can talk about that later. But then let's get the house standing first and see what you guys think of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But so there's an interesting counterpoint to this. So I was having discussion last night with some Big Snow folks. So we have some people here in Denver that are regular attendees to Big Snow. And so we try to meet on a quarterly basis. And last night we were hanging at Torchy's Tacos and we were talking about the difficulty of cracking into certain markets. So this no code movement, I think, is really cool. But there's a lot of stuff that if you took a no code approach, you would be eaten alive. Mm-hmm. Here's a great example. If I tried to write Support Vine today with no code, I would be fucked.
Totally. And
I mean, I was fucked the last time I wrote it, but if I tried it again now, the feature parity problem basically screws you. So if there are strong competitors in a niche, or let's not even say niche. If there are strong competitors in the market and you are not going against a niche to where you have a specific advantage or a specific workflow that's tailored to a group of people that are underserved, then you are going to have a hell of a time cracking that market because feature parity is what everybody expects in that market. Derek Reimer just said this with Level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People expect Slack. So here he is building Level. And he's going out there and then he finds out that the need is not quite as burning as he expected it, but it was enough that it was annoying. And then when he really dug into it, you know, people were like, well, I really like Slack, but this kind of annoys me about it. So what they're really, you know, another way of saying that is I like the features that Slack has and yours isn't quite there. It replaces some of the things that annoys me, but I'm also missing a lot of stuff if I come over to your thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Therefore, why would I switch? And, you know, that was part of the motivation of what ended up making him shut that down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's
tough. And I think that I don't want to come off as the like anti-bootstrap guy now, because I'm definitely not. But I think this talks to, and I think Derek even said it like in their last episode, maybe the one that was like a week ago at this point, which would have been like the 15th or whatever of May, that kind of around their episode, was that like to build level as a bootstrapper is not an option. To build level as a funded company where you could have five engineers and make the iOS app and make the Android app and make the native desktop and make the web and all this like look and feel beautiful, just like Slack does, might have worked, you know? And so I think that's another thing is like, if you have access to raise a bunch of money, you can skip the no code part and go straight like full implementation. But I think if you're wanting to bootstrap or need to bootstrap, then looking at like no code or an MVP in like a native way in a less competitive field or something like that is a good way to go. But I think if you're going to try to get into basically anything in digital marketing or anything like that, you have to be able to put the first thing you put out, be really, really good, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like another great example right now, if you go to e-commerce, if you want to do e-commerce on any platform,
yeah,
feature parity is already a problem because you've got BigCommerce, you've got Shopify, you've got Woo, you've got Magento. Depends on who you want to talk to about that, but there's a whole set of features that have been years in the making there. And if you come out with, you know, a replacement for Easy Digital Downloads, guess what? People are going to judge you against Easy Digital Downloads. And if you don't have feature parity with them, which by the way, they've got a substantial engineering team and they put years and years into this. So, you know, I have no idea how many engineer years that works out to, but that number is way, way higher than what you will be able to put in 12 months.
Right. And they're not stopping. So 12 months from now, they're going to be light years ahead of anything you could do. Yeah.
Right. Right. They continue to move forward. Like if they had stopped, maybe you got a shot, right? Because at that point, people are looking at this as a dead platform and maybe you can leap, but then there's other options. And do you have feature parity with those options? And so that is a huge struggle today. So that's why I'm definitely a strong advocate of the niche solutions. I was looking at various things that were popping up on FEI, and there's a lot of generalist stuff that's out there for the SaaS things. And I can see that those apps are probably struggling for competition at this point because they're generalists. So
struggling to grow because of competition, you mean?
Yeah. Like if you're not out marketing your competition, then your growth is at risk.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think that, you know, I'll apply an example of Castos to this is that I think the only reason that we have been successful so far and that, you know, the Tiny Seed folks thought that it was, you know, worth the risk of an investment because all of these companies are risks, is that we are different than almost all the other players in the podcast hosting market because of our WordPress integration. So like that's a differentiator that sets us apart that, I mean, for someone to come in, oh, build a podcasting plugin for WordPress, good freaking luck, man. I mean, we spend hours and hours and hours every week on it and it's already, you know, 5 years old. So yeah, I mean, if you don't have a thing to say, I can make this different because like Ben Orenstein is with Tuple, like, you know, ScreenFlow is just dead. There's not another good competitor. We can go make another good competitor. Or, you know, my podcast hosting platform is better because we integrate with WordPress better than anyone else. And WordPress is a really popular place to manage your content. That's, you know, pretty viable. Or I have insight into this market that no one else has that's really a technologist. That's probably an option. But yeah, I mean, I agree, Dave. I look on FEI every once in a while just out of curiosity. And like these social media scheduling tools that are making $3,000 a month, you're like, dude, Buffer is not going anywhere.
Yeah, Buffer and Anchor already ate that lunch. You're just getting scraps at this point.
Yeah, you are just going to get killed. And yeah, I mean, it's scary, man. And this like reminds me of like Jason Fried's talk from MicroConf. Like I kind of heard of it and watched parts of it. And like, he talks about like getting lucky because they were so early on in the SaaS and project management space that at this point, they're just an entrenched player. And he says, you know, I think we got lucky and I don't know if we could do it again. And you look at like, man, freaking Jason Fried, right? Like a guy could do anything. And he's saying, I don't know if I could do it again. It should give the rest of us like pause to say, if you have something good, freaking go for it. And if you don't think you have something good, then don't start it probably, you know, because like your chances of succeeding are really low unless you have a thing, you know, and that thing can be come from a lot of different angles. But if you don't have a thing, that makes you different and gives you the confidence to keep trucking, then you're probably going to get your ass handed to you.
Yeah. And it can't just be any old thing. Like, it can't be a feature. Features can be copied. It's got to be like a defensible thing, you know, a defensible competitive advantage, I think, is what the VC vernacular is. If you don't have one of those, you know, people aren't interested in investing in you. And even if you aren't looking for investment, if you don't have a defensible competitive advantage, competitors are going to come in and try to eat your lunch, and you're either better than they are and can stay ahead of them, or you're not. And, you know, spoiler alert, most people are not. You know, if you're not the innovator in that space, then chances are somebody's going to overtake you at some point, and that's going to suck.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a good point, is this is not a point in time thing, right? It's not like when I decide to do this or buy this business or go down this road, then it looks like this. It's shit. What happens, you know, 3 months or 3 years in, am I innovating? Am I thinking strategically about where the market is going and what customers need and all this kind of stuff? And can you stay ahead of everyone else in your industry? Because you're going to have, hope you have competitors, and can you do something different or better than all of them? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's true. So with that said, what are your thoughts this week? Do you think that Craig should be spending his $100,000 on some defensive competitive advantage that he hasn't thought of? We'd love to hear what you think. Send us an email, podcast@roguestartups.com. Tell us how wrong we are. Tell us how right we are. Tell us to shut the hell up. Whatever you want to tell us. Really, we'd love to hear from you. And of course, our one ask, as usual, if you feel like we're valuable to you, share us with somebody else that you know that would be of value to them as well. Until next week.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.